Welcome to The Stare Down, sports talk and real estate, with Sean Carpenter of Coldwell Banker in Columbus, Ohio, Bill Risser of Fidelity National Title in Tampa, Florida, and Todd Meininger of Cummins, Georgia. Listen in as they discuss the week in sports and toss in a pinch of real estate too. Now your hosts, Sean, Todd and Bill.
Hey, greetings, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Stare Down. It's our weekly sports talk and real estate show where we talk mostly sports and just a little bit of real estate at the end. I'm Sean Carpenter in Columbus, Ohio. Got my good friends Bill Risser down in St. Pete, Florida. Bill, how are you?
Good. A little chilly, 63 degrees and windy. So I know that the rest of the country feels like they're cold, but you don't know cold until you're in St. Pete and it's 63.
Bundle up there, thin skin. And Todd Meininger up in a cool coming Georgia. How are you, Todd?
Ooh, chilly, 38 degrees and windy, Sean, and it rained. Nice. It was a great football watching day. Didn't want to go outside.
It was a good, really football watching weekend with a little World Series tossed in. I'm pouring a cold IPA from Lexington, Kentucky when I was down there speaking. So let's start, guys. Let's raise our glass and thank Coach Jim McElwain for his time at University of Florida. He is done earlier this evening, and actually right now as we come on live on the air, Scott Strickland, the athletic director, is holding a press conference to announce the mutual parting of ways between the University of Florida and Coach Jim McElwain after the third loss in a three losses in a row, all SEC losses. They got pounded by the Georgia Bulldogs. Probably not much of a surprise, but just it's sad to watch when you're expecting maybe just some semblance of a fight, but offense, defense, special teams, coaching was just horrendous yesterday in the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. It was cold beers for Georgia, and it was shots of Jägermeister for the Gator fans. Todd, let's start with you. Your thoughts on the game leading into the dismissal of Coach McElwain.
So, Sean, no surprise that we got beat yesterday. I think the surprise was the manner in which we got beat. 14.5 was, I believe, maybe the starting or ending spread. And I thought Florida would do the traditional rivalry game. The lesser team hangs with them for a quarter and a half, you know, barely comes in at halftime, and then we get blown out in the second half. They scored 3 touchdowns in the first, 7 minutes, Sean? Something like that?
Yeah, Todd, I texted both of you guys. Florida went 3 and out the first 3 series. Georgia scored in 8 plays on their first 3 series. It was 21-0 after 8 plays for Georgia, 9 plays for Florida. Florida had, I think, 4 yards total offense. Georgia had 21 points.
It was just so uninspiring. There was no energy. There was no fight. There was no – this is arguably our biggest rivalry game of the year, the border war down in the neutral site in Jacksonville. So it was just really – it was almost as if the events leading to the game yesterday – we're already kind of a dead man walking, if you will. And I'm sure, Sean, you want to go to the before the game and of course, after the game, what transpired with Coach.
Bill, did you happen to see any of the game? And you know, as kind of a early stage, maybe I'll say Gator fan, what was your thoughts kind of from afar? You know, you're hearing bits and pieces of the local media and the national, you know, game day and things like that. What were your thoughts?
Look, as a new Gator fan, I've watched a lot of Gator football this year, and I saw the same thing that I've seen over and over and over watching football, and that was like an offense that really didn't look like it didn't have a clue, and I thought McElwain was an offensive guy, and a defense that refuses to wrap up and tackle, instead just wants to pound guys, you know, and drive into them and watch guys bounce off them left and right. And I don't know, you know, you have to tell me, you're lifelong SECers. Is it a talent issue at Florida? It can't just be a coaching issue. It's got to be a combination of both, right?
You know, I would say the talent is there. I just think maybe these guys that are talented are being led to believe that they're prima donnas who don't need to play fundamental football. And the coaching is just not such that they're going to get in the faces of them and you know, demand excellence. And you know, as you know, we've seen there are some guys that have stepped up and taken the place of the guys that are suspended. We've seen, you know, Todd mentioned earlier in the season, next man up. You know, there's clearly some 4-star guys that are on the bench because there's four and a half star guys ahead of them on the field. And it seems like at some point in time, if you're not playing, you're going to put the next man on the field. And the tackling, just, you know, the one long run by Sony Michel, he was wrapped up in the hole by our safety, and he was let go, and he ran 65 yards untouched.
Mm-hmm. Is it a Tom Coughlin kind of a coach then you're looking for as diehard Gator fans? What do you want? Discipline? What are you looking for?
Well, I mean, discipline. I go back to every single football game of the last 6 years and reread my tweets, and at some point in time, I'll talk about discipline. Bill, we had 8 false starts.
Yep.
8 false starts. That, I mean, that is unbelievable.
At home.
What I was surprised we didn't have in a game like this, and Todd, you tell me, I was kind of expecting when it got to the second half, there to be some personal fouls, some show your pride and don't get just punched in the face. But nope, we didn't get those, which I probably would have not been upset with. Just to show there might have been a little fight, but eight false starts and what, 2 or 3 of them out of timeouts, which is just the worst, you know, whether it's pro or college, it's just the worst when you get a penalty out of a timeout.
I'm going to come back to that discipline issue, right? Because discipline goes a lot of different ways, not just, sure, you know, how they practice, but
on the field, off the field,
how they're prepared. Yeah. The whole 9 yards, that whole piece of it. Look, I don't see this stuff coming out of Alabama. I don't hear about this stuff at Georgia, right? I don't hear about it there.
Will Muschamp was a monster recruiter. That was his forte, right? And I think to a certain extent, McElwain benefited from that first couple of years, right? We went to the SEC championship game 2 years in a row versus a very weak East. And Georgia's benefiting from that this year, but I think Georgia overall is a better team than we were in the past 2 years. And McElwain looked like the 18 recruiting class was going to be very good. So far, we've only lost one, I believe, three-star receiver out of Delray Beach, if I remember correctly. But, Sean, you said it. There was no fight. There was no fight in this team. There was no fight in McElwain. I mean, guys, I'm sure we're going to talk about it, but have you ever seen anything happen this quickly? Monday morning, you know, he drops this bombshell. And we can argue whether it was calculated or was it accidental. Did it happen and he didn't follow the correct protocol on reporting it? It's just the strangest 5 days. And he just, his heart was out. I don't know what happened to him. Maybe he's a West Coast guy. Bill, we're glad you're from Phoenix over here in Tampa, but it seems like the West Coast, two examples. One, Jim McElwain being a West Coast guy coming here. And the other was Jim Moira Jr. Remember the old Falcons coach? He was on tape in Seattle saying, "I'll take any job I can to get back over on the left side." And I just wonder if the South, you've got to have that mentality. McElwain looked beaten. He had no fight. Gators reflected with the Gators.
Yeah, guys, Russell Wilson just rolled Seattle right down the field through the Texans like butter and scored a touchdown. They took the lead with 21 seconds to go.
Wow.
So let's go back. They're coming off 2 losses. They're coming off Texas A&M loss and an LSU loss.
Bye week, right?
You know, and then a bye week. Yep. Playing against arguably their biggest rival, you can argue, Florida State. They're massive underdogs. The fans have not been happy with coaching at all this year. Coaching, player development, player discipline, as Bill, you talked about. And then Monday, I don't know, was that just his standard press conference, his typical Monday press conference?
Yeah.
And Todd, why don't you kind of set up the what happened, and then Bill, I want to let you talk about, because you probably heard more of the local reactions, you know, immediately. He says something at a press conference which kind of draws the ear of the media, right? Todd, that was
– He just very – it wasn't a direct question. It was – I don't even know what the question was, but he goes on one of his rambles that he likes to do and just – how much pressure the kids are under, the coaching staff. And he references that there had been death threats to the coaches and players at the University of Florida, right? So there's some follow-up questions, and he refuses to engage. He just dropped that little nugget and then refused to engage. So I knew there was trouble. About 2 hours later, the University of Florida sent out a statement saying there was nothing reported by coach. If this is the case, proper protocol was not followed. I mean, this opens up the University of Florida to a huge liability. If players are getting death threats and coaches and they do nothing about it and something happens, I mean, that's huge liability. So, again, I question whether he's a very emotional guy. He wears his heart on his sleeve, cries after victories. He just seemed beaten. And I wonder, is he evil and was using this to get out of his contract? Or were there actually death threats? Or did he just feel like, you know, death threats were on him because there's so much pressure? Was it more of a metaphor, right? I just don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was the reaction down there? Because obviously the local media was all over it.
Yeah, they were. I mean, local talk radio was having a field day with it. And really shredding him the entire week. They kind of for the same reasons Todd just mentioned. You know, what was he talking about? Why would this come out in a press conference as opposed to, you know, to the public as opposed to the school? That's not something you would ever announce at a press conference, right? Even mm-hmm. if it had happened, it really did happen, you'd go directly to the school and you wouldn't talk about it publicly. That's the last.
Forget about the liability bill. What about recruiting, negative recruiting? Yeah. Oh, you want to go to Florida? They're getting death threats. Obviously right. You wouldn't mention that in a casual in your press conference.
Yeah, and you're also, you know, think about it. Who are the death threats from? Are they from disgruntled fans? Are you telling me fans want to kill the coach or team? Maybe Mac Owen got one really funky tweet, right? And turned that into this big story. I mean, to be quite honest, that's probably what it was. Because I'm sure that, you know, the team, you've seen it, you both on Twitter more than I am when it comes to the sports side of things, that McElwain and then some of the team like Felipe and whoever were probably getting shredded on Twitter. That's not a death threat. That's just internet trolls doing what they do and letting them have it maybe a little too over the line. But for McElwain to take it there, that's a weird, you know, and you've talked about this guy, he's a very emotional guy and maybe that's part of it. But it didn't go over very well here.
You know, earlier in the season, I think it was maybe week two or week three, another coach is embattled in the SEC, Kevin Sumlin. His wife on Twitter released that he had received a very aggressive, racist letter, handwritten. She showed proof of it. You know, it was tweeted out, and that came up. And I don't think even Kevin Sumlin ever dropped that. But I don't know if, you know, I'm not saying Coach McElwain was making something up, but it just seemed like he was almost like, he got kind of caught, and then he's like, because then all of a sudden he couldn't say, like, well, I'm just making that up. It didn't happen. But then he also, when the university said, did you do anything? He said, I refuse to tell any more. Like, you know, almost like I plead the fifth.
Yeah.
And it just was weird that he almost played a card. Remember George O'Leary at Notre Dame had a false resume.
Yep.
So that was kind of in writing, and it was provable. What he said was like one of these weird statements, and the university stepped up to say, like, look, we want to make this right. We want to protect people, our players, certainly first and foremost, our staff and our head coach and our reputation, our recruiting class. And then he just kind of went silent. And then did you see the post-game press conference where the media almost, if you heard the way the media, SEC Network showed almost the whole thing, the media almost felt awkward asking the questions because the one guy said, Coach, do you still want to be here? Do you even still want to be the coach?
He didn't seem like he wanted to be.
No. I mean, it was, his answers were so weird. He talked in past tense.
Yep.
It was very much, you know, because I asked him, they said, you know, we saw you walking off the field with your wife and you were smiling and laughing. And he said, you know, well, my wife told me to keep my head up. And what, you know, what am I supposed to do? You know? And I mean, I agree. I mean, you can't analyze. I mean, you know, you hugged Coach Smart after the game. Well, that's what coaches do. You walk off the field, you sing your own.
They won a championship together at Alabama, right?
Yeah.
Both as coordinators.
Just a weird thought. So
my question, Sean, is he evil and wanted out and maybe wanted to go to greener pastures? Or was he the 10th grader at a party bragged that he kissed Stacey Jacobson? And then when you're pressed on it, you're like, no, I didn't actually. So, I mean, did he just make something up?
That was my first thought. My first thought is he just kind of said, like, hey, here's the pressure. And it almost feels like we're getting death threats. Well, almost feels like you're getting death threats, and getting death threats are very, very different things.
And I was listening to ESPNU on Sirius XM channel 84. And Rick Neuheisel was on. I guess they brought him in. It's a big story. And he basically said, if McElwain wanted let's say he really wanted it, he comes out the next day and said, hey guys, it was, you know, a little bit of, hyperbole. Yeah. I made a huge mistake. I said this, and I think people are it would have damaged him, but I think people would have been forgiving. You know, this guy's obviously in a lot of pressure, but he just refused to address it. And it was all of a sudden, it was the dirty little secret swept under the rug. What a weird week.
Wouldn't you think he probably knew by Tuesday or Wednesday that the writing was on the wall, right?
Yeah.
That he wasn't going to survive the week. And that would lead to the kind of the other behaviors, you know, the rest of the week that you're talking about. But what's next for Florida, guys?
Go ahead. If they wanted to fire him for cause, why'd they let him coach another game? My family, a bunch of attorneys, are trying to fire him for cause, but I'm like, you let him coach, knowing what he did. I think, Sean, you texted us yesterday. This is just posturing. His buyout is $12.76 million. Florida wants to start from zero. They're probably going to meet it, you know, $6-7 million and be done with it, so they can move on. By the way, I've lost one job in my life, and I did not get a $6 million buyout. so don't feel too bad for Coach. He'll land on his feet. But what's next? Sean, I'm hearing Scott Frost, UCF, Dan Mullen, Bob Stoops. You're hearing all kinds of names. I don't know
the radio. Let's kind of roll through some of the names that we're hearing. Okay, let's start with Scott Frost down the street at UCF. We're going to hit the two in state. There's Scott Frost, right? And here's the question about that. Nebraska is most likely going to get rid of Mike Riley. Nebraska, you know, is where Scott Frost made his name. Was a well-received quarterback there. Nebraska obviously can't fire Mike Riley now, but and Scott Frost isn't doing anything, obviously, with the season they're having at UCF, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And the other name is right in your backyard, Charlie Strong, a very defensive-minded, very quiet, very opposite of what Florida fans apparently seem to want and need. That's an offensive coach who is going to throw the ball all over the lot and compete and not get, you know, three and outs and quarterbacks that run out of bounds. 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage. I think it would be an amazing turn of events if Strickland hires a defensive coach or a coordinator. I mean, we've had Muschamp as a coordinator, and we've had, you know, McElwain for the most part as a coordinator. He did have 2 years at Colorado State. So just initial thoughts on the two guys from Florida, because obviously we're not getting Rick or Jimbo Fisher or Kerwin Bell, I don't think is coming out of that door. Scott Frost, Todd, and then Bill, I'll let you sort of talk about Charlie Strong.
I mean, Scott Frost, it's kind of hard when it's not even on your radar to think who's going to be a successor to Jim McElwain. The AD has his short list at all times. But so with only a couple days to think about it, he seems to be doing great things at ECF. I hear he's just a beast recruiter. So if he could surround himself with good coaches, I would welcome that.
He's got to be, what, no more than 35, 36?
Young guy, similar to the Oklahoma coach, right? Just young guy. From what I know about him, I think it would be a good pick.
I'm just going to Google while Bill's talking about Charlie Strong. I'm going to Google his age.
Yeah. Charlie Strong, do you think there's an issue there with just having – he's not even been at USF a season yet.
Yeah.
So how do you handle that?
He failed under the spotlight of Texas.
Right, shown that he struggled under one of the top three jobs in the country, probably, when you think about
it. Did he coach at Louisville or Mike?
He coached at Louisville and had success at Louisville. Beat Florida.
He's 12-0, yeah.
And that's what got him to Texas. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think I don't see a lot of credence in that rumor yet. Heard nothing around here about it, obviously. This week I'll pay close attention as the talk show.
So Scott Frost, 42 years old. Okay, so those are the two names. You know, Chip Kelly is certainly a name that I think would appeal to the fans in Florida. Spreads the ball all over the field, looks for mismatches, does what he can to score points.
Proven to be a success in the college ranks, you know, failed at the NFL level to an extent. I mean,
so did Spurrier, so did Lou Holtz,
right?
So did, you know, so many coaches have done
Lou Saban.
So, yeah, well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of great college coaches, Calipari, Patino, that have tried the NBA and had no success. So that's the name that's not coaching right now. Among the other names that are coaching, Todd, you mentioned Dan Mullen. Mm-hmm. Why Dan Mullen is intriguing. Dan Mullen coached at Florida. He helped kind of develop Tim Tebow into what he was. He then went on to coach Dak Prescott and now Nick Fitzpatrick. So he clearly understands kind of the spread offense and preparing a quarterback, which is one of the knocks on McElwain is there's just been no, what's the word I'm looking for? Progression. No.
Yeah, you got it.
Evolvement of Felipe Franks. And I'm not faulting the kid. I just think there's times that like every eighth play, he looks solid in the pocket. He runs out and he has that gazelle giraffe, like stride where he can make some good runs.
Bernie Kosar, right?
Yeah. So Mullen is intriguing, but you know, that's where Strickland was the AD. Does coming here, knowing the pressure. I mean, he was an offense coordinator here. He wasn't a head coach here. And do we want to go with another, you know, I mean, he's been a head coach now for what, 7-8 years there?
Yep.
Big win at Texas A&M yesterday.
They're quietly 6-2, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. They are. Among the other coaches, then all of a sudden you kind of go down a notch. You mentioned Stoops. Stoops isn't coming out of retirement. Stoops didn't just retire. Now I think let's take his name off the list. The hottest name I think you're hearing is Matt Campbell, the coach of Iowa State.
Memphis? Iowa State.
Iowa State just led them to their second win of a big top five team in the Big 12. They beat Oklahoma. They beat Texas Christian yesterday. Herb Street threw his name out there 2 weeks ago saying if there's not an AD that has his name on your list, you're not doing your homework. The question is he ready? You know, Iowa State, two big wins. There's that little window that Shaka Smart had in basketball and, you know, that some players, you know, when Dickie Vitale starts touting your name, you got a little window to jump. I believe it's Justin Fuentes from Virginia Tech, who went from Memphis. And then Mike Norvell is the coach at Memphis now, who's dropping a lot of points on the board. And is he's been a head coach since Fuentes left. So those are the names that I'm hearing. Any other names, guys, that you're hearing that I've left out?
No, I just want to throw this out there. What are your guys' take, the two of you personally, on Rich Rod out of Arizona? If he wanted to get back, you know, into a bigger conference, something more important.
I like Rich Rod. Does he want the job though? He's got to be close to 60, right? And again, he's in Arizona where he can do hard, good work, but there's not the pressure. Right. I think I'd favor someone just a little more of an up-and-comer instead of someone who's kind of on the mountaintop and maybe coming this way. What do you think, Sean?
Rich Rod's 54, so he's right in that. You know, he's younger than Stoops. I think his brilliant mind would be solid. You get him the talent of Florida. I'm sure he recruited Florida when he's at Michigan. Michigan was a pipeline to
Wasn't he West Virginia also?
Yeah,
West Virginia. I think he knows that area. Mike Gundy's another name I'm hearing. Mike Gundy not happy, not getting along well with the administration at Oklahoma State.
The mullet would fit in nicely.
Well, he does throw the ball around.
If he comes out in jorts and a mullet, that would be the best press conference ever. Awesome.
He does throw the ball around. So, guys, it's speculation now because obviously, if you're going for a coach who's still playing, you can't make really a move unless that coach wants to really say goodbye to his team and you know, make a move unless their administration. Jeremy Foley, I think, had a little cachet to walk into any program in America with some credibility, having Spurrier, having Urban Meyer, having Billy Donovan. Scott Strickland, I'm sorry, he does not have that credibility. This is his first hire. This is his first major hire. He hired Cameron Neubauer, our women's basketball coach. And I believe, you know, thinking that on the tier of top-level positions at the school, women's basketball coach, with all due respect, is probably about eighth or ninth, on the list. And that was his, I think, first and biggest hire. So obviously getting rid of Coach McElwain is big. This is the signature move for Scott Strickland's tenure as AD at Florida. Mm-hmm. This would be the biggest thing he does because he can't hire a 3 year and out. This has to be someone that's why I like a Scott Frost. I like a Matt Campbell. I like a Mike Norvell. I like a young guy who can grow. You know, we saw Matt Corral. We saw a lot of the guys, Todd, on Twitter say all bite, you know, hashtag all bite 18 is their kind of their hashtag for their program. And you mentioned to me, Todd, on a text offline, we have a really solid class. We have a top five class. We've had one defection, but that's not even a defection to another team. That's just I'm pulling my commitment.
I'm going to reconsider.
Yes. Yes.
So real quick, Sean, what a great job to walk into, right? We get all those, you know, players back in a great recruiting class. Where does McElwain end up next year? Do you have any prediction?
Oregon State.
Now, would you want to hire him if you were Oregon State with all that, that went on, all the drama?
You're Oregon State. I don't think you can be, you know, he was 3 years ago in Colorado State recruiting the West. Yep. I think he knows the league. He brings maybe an SEC swagger to a program that desperately needs victories.
And you can win 8 wins there and they're happy, right?
He's from the West, you know, and so we'll see. Does he fall to a Montana State or an Idaho or some, you know, school like that? I don't know. I hope he lands somewhere. Cause I think he's probably a good coach. I just don't think he was ever ready for the position of head coach at University of Florida. And that became more evident later in the tenure than early in the tenure.
Yep.
So
I agree. We'll see.
All right, guys, let's turn away from that. We'll follow up more along on weeks to come. That was a big portion, but because we're Gator heavy on the show, Bill, let me ask you, biggest story yesterday in football, was it the Ohio State Penn State game? Was it the Georgia Florida? You know, right now the top four in the AP, the CFP rankings come out on Tuesday. Doesn't mean anything. Right. Still 8 weeks, 4 weeks to go. Yeah. And you have Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on kind of what did you see yesterday from any of the games that was like, you know, Notre Dame sneaking up right now. Notre Dame, I think, dropping it at 5 right now.
Yeah, Notre Dame had a big win over – it was NC State, right? It really made them look
– And Josh Adams stepping up as a player.
Whew. Yeah, but I'll tell you, the game for me was I thought Penn State had that thing wrapped up. And, Sean, you had to think the same thing. I know you live right there in Columbus, but I thought that game was over.
21-3, Bill.
I mean, down 18. And just the way they did it once again – reality shows go away. just watch it Saturday or Sunday.
You'd rejected that script if you're a screenwriter.
There's no way this happens. Yeah. So I thought that was that for me. That was the game of the weekend, and it just opened up. It just think about every Georgia fan out there is just screaming with joy, right? That Penn State goes down, puts Georgia in the two slot. And for TCU and
Penn State
to go down that same – it's like the week before we lost two top five teams. We lost two more.
And that's why I say pump the brakes, everybody.
Exactly. Keep pumping. Keep pumping. Yeah, there's no way to – even right now, I know Georgia's too, but Georgia's got – they got some games ahead of them. And, oh, my gosh. Yeah, so it's very – it was a lot of
– And this, Bill, let me just say, as we start pumping the brakes, Michigan State loses to Northwestern – right, mm-hmm. Michigan State kind of sneaks up to number 16. They lose a triple overtime game to Northwestern. So now everyone's going to say, well, they're out of the running. That's exactly the kind of team that beats an Ohio State team, that Ohio State comes in high, Michigan State comes in off a loss, and, you know, and all of a sudden people are, you know, then, you know, it's just a
– Yeah.
It was just a
– Let it know, play out, right?
Tip my hat to JT Barrett. The guy gets some negative press, but to go – hit his 13 for 13 in the fourth quarter, his last 16 passes, an OSU record.
Three touchdowns,
game management, you know, had another touchdown, or they had an interception taken away on pass interference, which was not a pass interference call. Was a well-played game. Todd, what was your non-Florida, non-Ohio State game of the week that you kind of looked at and said, wow, that was a good game?
I will be glad to answer that real quick. We are a couple divided. I graduated University of Florida proudly. Jenny, University of Georgia pharmacy graduate. And she's very excited. I'm trying to tell her because we've been there, right, Sean? Georgia, it's been a little while. But I said, it really doesn't matter that you're ranked 2 now. So that's great, but who cares? You're playing Alabama. That's going to take care of itself. But I told her, don't sleep on Kentucky, South Carolina, Auburn, Georgia Tech. They have 4 legit games before they have the chance to even play Alabama. So I'm just like, as you guys are saying, pump the brakes. Yeah. That would be advice I give anyone in that in the top 8, top 10. Just let it play out.
Sure.
So, Sean,
sure.
The game that caught my eye, which if you would have told me it caught my eye before yesterday, I would have told you you're crazy. Did you see Ole Miss Arkansas yesterday?
Yes.
Ole Miss was up 30. I'm sorry. Yeah, Ole Miss was up 31-3 at home. 31-3 in the first. I think it was the end of the first quarter, maybe early in the second quarter. I mean, early. And Arkansas just – with their fat ankles and just running through mud, they just slodge their way to that victory. That was unbelievable. That was, that caught my eye for sure. Yeah. So
Bill, what was the, what happened out West? I went to bed early, but I know that USC was kind of laying a hurting on Arizona State.
Destroyed them by 30. And by
wow, really?
Yeah, it was bad. But Arizona, yeah, they laid out Washington State. So half of the Arizona teams came through the way they were supposed to. But I got a my best score of the day. It was UCF played Austin Peay, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Do you see the final in that game?
It was 66-33 at one point.
It was 73-33. You know what the spread was?
I can tell you.
41.
Wow.
So there are a lot of really happy people that bet that game and a lot of really upset people.
What was the over-under?
Yeah. Over-under was 75 and a half.
In the third quarter, it was 66-33. And,
right.
You know, I'm not a great mathematician, but I'm like, that's 99 points.
That's right.
And, yeah. And Bill, let's go in your backyard. Kind of the team that was
USF
sneak up on the USF goes down.
Yeah.
At home, too.
And lost their streak of 30-plus games. I think they were at 23 straight games scoring 30 or more points. Houston,
wow.
Houston held them to 24. So rough outing for Charlie Strong and company, Quentin Flowers. Yeah, I mean, now with a loss and in their conference, now they're going to get a mid-major bowl, whatever you want to call those things. They're out of the
mid-tier,
out of January 1 stuff. But, we're rooting hard for UCF now. just up the road.
Yeah, all right. So just let's just make, I mean, like a little prediction here on the stare down. I will predict that all the coaches that are in running for the Florida position will lose between now and the end of the year. Iowa State guy will take a loss. Memphis will take a loss. Virginia Tech will take a loss. Who else? Rich Rod will take a loss. I mean, anyone. I just think that now all of a sudden, because you know why? Because they're going to start getting asked questions. Press conferences are going to come up. They're going to say, are you thinking about, have you talked to anyone from Florida?
No. They're going to say, no, quit asking me. Yeah.
Yeah. And let's circle back, Todd. Florida needs to win three of the next four games to even make a bowl game, which I can't even tell how important that is for those guys to have. Randy Shannon, I think, is probably going to be named the interim coach, I would guess.
He is.
He has already has been. And is Nussmeier going to stay?
I assume they're keeping the whole stuff.
Spurrier's not going to step in.
Did you hear the story that Spurrier reached out twice to McElwain?
To try and help? Yeah.
And he said no. No thanks, coach.
Mm. Yeah, so, that's unbelievable. From a mind standpoint, you know.
We have Missouri.
At Missouri, South Carolina.
South Carolina is going to be a tough win.
South Carolina's going to be a tough win. Then we play, UAB. UAB and then Florida State. Florida State is going to be probably at that point in time 3-6. So that is a miserable game.
Remember how big that game is?
They need to win three. They need to beat Missouri. If they don't, put it this way, if they don't beat Missouri, they don't go to a bowl game. Missouri gives them a chance.
In the last 10 years, how many times has Florida State had national championship implications?
In the last 10 years?
Yeah, 10. Go back 10.
Twice because of Florida State, not because of us.
Oh, okay, so I have to go back 12. We got to go back 12 to get to Tebow year.
15, 20 years. Yeah. Each and every year, it was 3-5, 2-6.
Right.
I mean, unbelievable. There hasn't been this meaningless of a Florida State game in a long time.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's whip through NFL quickly because there's other things we want to get to. NFL today. Starts off in London with an early game. No surprise. Browns.
Why are we playing in London? I still scratch my head over all that.
They're going to put a team there one year. That's what they keep thinking. There's no way that's going to work, right?
Yeah. No.
I hate it. But
travel and you know, put a team in Vegas, people will go. Put a team in London, people aren't going to go.
How about Todd's hometown Dolphins just laying an egg Thursday night?
Oh, man.
40 zip. What happened?
That was horrible.
They're playing great. They had some great comeback wins this season, but then all of a sudden they were nothing.
So I'm glad you brought that up, Bill. I would like to ask you guys if that was a late hit, and I will answer saying the NFL is trying to change the culture. I think that's a horrible call. But he did slide late, but I'm thinking you have to call it. So hypothetically, before we chew on that, Sean, let's say the over-under for the Miami-Baltimore game was 38. Let's just say, right? And let's say in the fourth quarter, there was not only a pick six by a defensive end, there was a fumble recovery in the end zone, And the last play of the game was a pick six. So 21 of those 40 points came. So, again, either you're very ecstatic if you bet the over, or you're talking off a ledge if you bet the under.
And that's why, once again, that's why we don't gamble, right, Todd?
I hear you, Bill. I hear you. That's hypothetically, by the way, very hypothetical.
No, I totally, and hypothetically, that's why we don't gamble.
Let's talk hometown teams. Todd, your boys come out of a rainy day, a really rainy day up in New York, down most of the game.
Needed a win today.
Come back, and man, I got to tell you, the go-ahead touchdown pass from Matt Ryan to Mohamed Sanu, back of the end zone, pouring down rain. The catch by Sanu was unbelievable.
Yep.
And then they go on to get tack on a late field goal. Atlanta wins. Bill, your Buccaneers, I think, are done.
They are done. They are 2-5. Everything that can go wrong has gone wrong. I think Jameis Winston's hurt. He's not letting on. His shoulder was hurt earlier in the season. It got dinged up last week. They said he was fine. He looked horrible. I can't tell you how many passes were high, low, nowhere near the intended target. That's trouble in Tampa Bay.
Your dreaded Browns went 0-7, 0-8. What are they, Sean?
They're 0-8. They're not. And the Bengals squeaked by a horrible Buccaneers team or Colts team.
Yep.
Buffalo hangs close to New England. I believe they still have two games against New England. I don't think they've even played.
5-2. The Bills are 5-2.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who would have guessed?
How about the Chargers? Still have not beaten Tom Brady ever.
Wow.
They beat the Patriots once in Tom Brady's tenure, but it was a year he was out with the blown out knee. So
that's your hometown Chargers, right, Bill?
My LA? Hometown? Yeah, whatever.
Philadelphia is stretching out their lead in the East.
They're 7-1.
Yeah. And with Houston's last second loss to Seattle as we were on the air tonight, Jacksonville tied for the lead in the South.
Wow.
Beware of the Jags, right?
Wow.
So
much for them moving to London.
Right. And then tomorrow night we have a classic AFC West, I believe Broncos at Chiefs, right?
That's a great game. Oh, it'll be fun. Yeah.
Broncos pretty much in a must win. Otherwise they go down three. They'll be
3-4,
three games back. They'll be 3-4 and KC will be 6-2. So that'll be almost a 3.5 game deficit. So, yeah.
And we got the Steelers Lions tonight. If for anybody interested in that one, so
all right, let's finish with the World Series, which means we're going to go MLS next. Todd, you want to break down the MLS game that happened in the Mercedes-Benz Center?
Sigh. So, honestly, not I was not familiar with the playoff structure, but they had a knockout game. So I think 3-4 in the East played, and it was. My Atlanta United, and why am I drawing a blank? Who did Columbus, of course, played Columbus, right?
Save the crew.
Why would I draw a blank? So, good game. The goalies were
unbelievable.
Head, yeah. Right? The old hockey term, he's standing on his head. And unfortunately, it was decided in a penalty kicks, and I think Columbus won 3-1. A lot of missed penalty kicks by Atlanta. So, a great season. They hold records for attendance in Atlanta. Soccer's here to stay. It's welcome, but kind of a disappointing. You play a whole season and it's a one game and out. Probably similar to the wild card in baseball, right? Where if you win, you're loving it. If you lose, it seems like a big, quick disappointment.
Yep. Bill, when I say 19 points, what comes to mind?
19 points. 19 points. Oh, that would be the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Tampa Bay Lightning leading. Yeah,
they lost to the Ducks last night, 3-1. Rough game on home ice, but yeah, they're playing very well, and
they have the most points. So they're tied with the Blues and the Ducks for the most points so far early season. 9-2-1.
Yeah, Stamkos, Kucherov, this is all kind of new stuff to me. But Marty St. Louis and Stamkos were kind of the item back when they had made their run, won the cup, and they're calling this Kucherov Stamkos kind of a line the same thing, except. The older Stamkos is now taking what Marty St. Louis was, the assist guy, and Kucherov has been scoring a ton of goals. Yeah, so it's fun to see this transition and listen to all the locals that are really into hockey get me fired up about it. So it's been.
And who's been playing most of the goal down there?
The new kid, Vasilevskiy, right?
The young guy.
He's solid, good, really
solid
good.
Player. Yeah.
Yep. So they've got a good chance. They were so frustrated last year and so disappointed. It was the talk of sports radio a lot how bad the Lightning were. But Stamkos was out for almost the whole season. So
Well,
we'll see.
You know, it'd be interesting to just keep your eye on the pulse there down there, Bill, because with the Buccaneers really going into the last seven games with probably not much chance and the Lightning starting strong, watch the tide turn there as they, you know, just watch the way maybe the sport says the Buccaneers lost, but let's go to the Lightning. They're playing at Colorado tonight. And
the lead story on the news.
Yeah. Yeah. And a great owner of the Lightning. He's actually funding and partially and helping promote a $3 billion renovation of Channelside area alongside the Amalie Arena down on the waterfront. It's going to be just a state of the art downtown in the next
bars and restaurants and residential.
Everything residential, retail. Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
They call that mixed use in real estate.
Sean. That's exactly right.
There's probably a lot of doors and hardware to be sold at places like
that. You know what? You better get down to Tampa. You better get that in your district.
There you go. Yeah, it's pretty slow. So
it snowed yesterday, Bill. Ron and I are thinking about it more and more.
I'm telling you.
All right, guys, let's finish with what's been a really fun World Series so far. Bill, I know as a diehard baseball fan, especially leaning West Coast and leaning National League, it's been a really well-played World Series. I think it's been a well-coached World Series, with the exception of Game 2, maybe, which was, I think, one of the best games I've ever seen.
Right.
And the three of us just could not put down the phone and go to sleep, and thank God, because so let's start in Game 2. So in the history of Major League Baseball, there's been 17 postseason home runs in the World Series. In Game 2, there was 5.
Say that again, Sean.
You mean extra innings?
Extra innings.
Not
17. Yeah, wow, I can't believe it.
17 home runs in extra innings.
In the entire
World Series. 104? Yeah.
World Series. More than that.
And there was 5 in that game. And there was 8, I think, home runs in the game.
Yeah. Well, my stat of the night is the Dodgers were 2 hit through 9 innings, and the 2 hits were home runs.
Yeah.
They got their first single in the 10th inning.
Verlander, yeah.
Yeah, they it was
in Game 2, is that right?
It's absolutely right.
Verlander pitched a gem and he just gave up 2 hits and it was
2
down
hits 3 and they're both home runs, yeah. 3-1. So
Verlander climbed up out of the clubhouse with his half shirt and his hairy back and he was like, "Come on guys, we can win this game." That was great.
Let's go. Yeah.
So you uncovered, we were going back and forth, but I forget the closer name for the Dodgers. Jensen. He was trying to get the 6 out. Save.
That is the most unbelievable stat I shared with you guys I've ever seen in my life.
Rivera, right?
Yeah. So we talked about this. We were having a conversation for our listeners. We were talking about a 6 out save and how rare they are.
Different landscape is
such a hard thing to win a 6 out save, and it's one of the rarest things in sports. And
rare today.
And I said I think Rivera had a ton of them, and we questioned.
I wouldn't have believed her.
So I asked about 20 people this week. How many do you think? And most people said 12, 14, 21. Someone said 30. And they're like, that's way too high, but 30. Mariano Rivera has had 114 6 out or more saves in postseason play. Let me say that again. 114 6 out or more saves in postseason. Well, think of how many postseason games the Yankees have been in since Rivera was there.
Well, they went that stretch of 5-6 straight at an average of 7-10. See, that's 60 I can think of right there without even trying. But he probably saved just about every win they had is what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, put it this way. One of the stats that was in that list that I didn't send you, Mariano Rivera has pitched the last out, or he threw the last pitch of, I think, 49 postseason games, 50 postseason games, something like that. Maybe more than that. Well, it had to be more than that if you had 114 saves.
Yeah. You sure that 114 is enough for his career?
Yeah.
The 2-out save.
I'll look it up again.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. I mean, that seems incredible.
Yeah. He's an amazing guy. But
I think even for career is amazing.
Look at Goose Gossage or someone like that, because that's a guy who pitched in the 80s. I'll bet you there's a ton of 6-out saves when you go back that far, right? Because the specialization showed up right about when the middle of maybe Mariano's career, right? Late 90s.
Yeah, but I believe I texted you guys. Goose Gossage was second place on that list.
Yeah, how many was?
With like 30.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was such a different number. But, boy, the series has been, you know, Dave Roberts, the 9 pitchers being changed in Game 2 really hurt them. Because that game, Bill, you know, it's rare that it's 98 degrees in L.A. in October.
Yeah.
Right. So that, yep, that contributed to the ball, jumping out of the park. But well,
yeah, it was a Stippling. Ross Stippling comes in, throws four pitches, walks a batter, he yanks him. And Stippling, you know, it's been a long reliever and even a starter in the past. To pull him that fast because he threw four straight balls just put a ton of pressure on the rest of the bullpen. And that's, to be quite honest, that's why Jansen had to come in the eighth. Because if Stippling stays in and gets out of that, because he probably can, you can push back Morrow another inning, and eventually you don't have to get to Jansen until the ninth. And they win that game. But, you know, that's where we're at. That's why it's so much fun. That's why the most important game of a 7-game series we get to watch in just about 10
minutes. Five, right?
Yeah, game five of a 7-game series is, without a doubt, the most important.
And, you know, Houston playing at home, tough to beat. Lost their first game last night.
Yep.
Kershaw, tough to beat.
But he's beatable. He's extremely beatable in the postseason. His last game, that game one in L.A., was kind of an anomaly, to be quite honest, right? Kershaw struggles in the postseason. We'll see what happens here. There's a lot of pressure. Houston's, you know, really good at home, so this will be a lot of fun to watch tonight. And look, I'm pulling for the Astros. It's this L.A. thing in me, right? If you're from San Diego, you never root for an L.A. team. It's just the way it goes. So
NoCal is better than SoCal?
Go Stros. No, I mean, they're both L.A. L.A. just... You know, they just think San Diego's this little redheaded stepchild down there that with a bunch of retired admirals that live in Coronado, and you know, a bunch of sports teams that suck and never win. Which that part's true.
No, they're both SoCal. I'm thinking San Francisco.
Yeah, no, that part's true. Unless you count, I want to repeat this one more time. I have a forum to do it. Unless you talk about the San Diego Soccer's indoor soccer league team, Julie V. They won 10 straight indoor championships, national championships in indoor soccer. Look it up.
Deep from the vault.
Yeah. Indoor soccer. It rocks.
Bill, you're right. I went back through our records. Rivera's thrown a six out save 14 times. 114, I think, in his career.
There you go.
14 times in the postseason.
Which is crazy.
Gossage has six.
The postseason?
2.5 times more by Rivera.
Yeah.
And then this was the stat I threw out. A remarkable 119 of Rivera's saves lasted more than one inning. That's 117.
Yeah, so they're bringing him in with two.
Now listen to this. The second place for more than one inning saves, Keith Foulke, 55.
Wow.
So double the number.
Wow.
Yeah. 14 of those required six outs or more. So in the postseason. So pretty impressive.
Yep.
Yeah. Very, very impressive. So what do you think? I think Bill,
we're two out of three. Best two out of three.
Well, right? I said Dodgers in six. You said Astros in
Sean, six. You said Dodgers in seven. I said Dodgers in six. Said,
yeah, I would love to see game seven in this series.
I said Astros in six. Seven. So we're all still alive.
Yeah. And here's the thing. If Kershaw wins tonight, Verlander goes tomorrow versus Rich Hill, probably, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Tuesday.
And I think the one thing that Roberts is probably regretting in that game two was he pulled Hill out a little early.
Yeah. Yeah, that hurt too. That didn't get – once again, he goes an extra inning. Stripling gets his inning in all of a sudden.
I think just the way Hill batted, it kind of made sense the way the book tells you.
Yeah.
Right, Bill?
I mean, yeah.
As an NL guy.
Yeah, but I think Dave Roberts might have outthunked himself. And sometimes managers will do that. They just go a little too – and look, if everything works out, if Jansen gets the save, no one cares at all about Hill being pulled early or Stripling being pulled after one batter. So just the way it is.
Well, I'll tell you what. Next week, if the World Series doesn't have something crazy happen, if Florida doesn't hire a new coach and make us go long, next week will be our 35-minute show, I promise. Every time we think.
Oh, I've heard that before.
Todd, what do you got coming up this week, buddy?
Oh, so I'm in sales, right, as are you guys, but I work for corporate America, so the world is on fire. They're trying to close the year strong. So from now, probably until first week of December, just the beatings will continue until morale improves, as I like to say. So, hey, just, you know, that's part of the grind, part of the gig, trying to bring home as much we can in 2017 and do what I can.
Sounds like for the next 10 weeks, Todd, you need to be building relationships, solving problems, and having fun, right?
Mm.
Three of my favorite things, Sean.
Novel concept.
Nice.
You should trademark that.
Bill, what do you got, buddy? Who's coming up on the real estate sessions, and what do you got coming up with the folks at Fidelity?
So real estate sessions, I don't know if you know this guy, Sean. His name is Jason Frazier. He's with Mason McDuffie Mortgage in San Ramon, California. You ever heard of Jason?
I don't.
He's part of the...
No, but I really enjoyed Heather's conversation.
Good. I like Heather's a very interesting woman, really, really passionate about Southwest Florida. So a lot of fun. Jason is the chief information officer, also chief strategy officer with Mason McDuffie. They're out of California. And he's part of that Snap Pack group that you see on Facebook. So, maybe you've seen mm-hmm. Dustin Brougham and Chelsea Pites. So really bright guy, has an interesting background. From a C-level executive to be pushing social as hard as he does, that's different and very interesting. So it's kind of a longer episode, actually. That's what I was working on the set today. So that will publish Tuesday. And this week for me, big sales meeting on Friday. You know those sales guys, Todd, how you have to kind of keep them pumped up and moving in the right direction?
Yeah.
He's nodding. This is a podcast. You have to say something.
Yes, sir. Hey, by the way, we hate it as much as you do.
Well, I'm only in a support role. Our sales manager has to run it, but she's laid out a bunch of stuff that Bill's going to cover. One you'll appreciate, Sean. I have this wonderful, for realtors, a wonderful spreadsheet for business planning. And it's that time of the year when everyone's mm-hmm. thinking about that. And it is an incredibly deep analysis of what you did in 2017. So you can know down to the individual source, what was your return on investment for what you laid out in hard and soft costs and what turned into transactions. Sean, okay. I will send you the spreadsheet.
I'd love to see it. You will
dig it. We'll talk about that offline. So
yeah, that'd be cool to see.
Real quick, guys, I want to hear something funny. Our sales meeting's in Vegas in March. Oh,
that's not a sales meeting.
Here's the thing. They sent out a 4-page letter of things we cannot do and how if you do any of this, blah, blah. I'm like, why don't you have the sales meeting in like Omaha, Nebraska? Why have it in Vegas? Other than the obvious fact and money, it's probably cheaper to have it there. But yeah, it's like, we're going to Vegas. You're not allowed to have any fun. If you do have fun, it's a fireable offense. And I'm like, why are we going to Vegas? I mean, this is horrible.
It's awesome.
The dumbest thing ever. Go ahead. Sorry, Bob.
No, that's great. Guys, for me, I teased you on it earlier. This is it. This is almost the bad boy. I know it looks like a lot, but I'm doing an all day presentation for the RE/MAX company in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I'm flying down Tuesday for a all day session on Wednesday. We're using an Olympic theme. I'm going to talk about a lot of different things about their business. Go ahead, Bill.
I just want to ask you a question. What you just held up was a 400 page or 200 front and back notebook with every slide.
Every slide.
Does that help you practice for your presentation?
Yeah. Well, what I'll do is
the presentation too.
No, I really don't. What I'll do is on the plane on the way down, and I'll have it on the podium or the lectern when I'm down there, and during like one of the videos I'm showing or during one of the discussions, I'll flip to sort of see how many slides before my next break. And this is really the first time I've built this presentation, and so what I hope to do from an ROI standpoint is down the road when someone in Phoenix says, we want to do like a seminar for our agents. What do you got for like a full day's thing? I'm like, I got this Olympic theme one. And, so then I can just pull it off the shelf and I'll have some notes saying like this slide took too long. This story didn't hit, I'll make some notes kind of the way a stand-up comedian does saying like this joke needs to be earlier. So it seems like a lot, but a lot of those slides are, I'm flipping through, in a second each.
Oh no, rapid! I love that. I love rapid fire images. I mean, I think that's a wonderful way to present, and no walls of words in a Sean Carpenter presentation.
No walls of words, mostly photos. And then the great thing is that way, if people snap photos from the audience, they can't really recreate my presentation. My workbook will be, I'm guessing it'll be 16 to 18 pages long, but I do a lot of fill in the blank, so the audience wants to fill in the blank and not leave anything out. So it keeps them engaged.
Awesome. Wow.
Really looking forward to that. And then the next week I get to go, we'll need to talk because Sunday next week I'll be probably in the car for the stare down because I'll be speaking at the first NAR convention I've ever been speaking at.
That's Chicago.
The National Association of Realtors in Chicago. Nice. Speaking to my peers at the National Association of Realtors.
What's the topic? Now we're doing, this is stare down, sports talk and real estate. What's the topic at NAR?
Topic at NAR is called Leveraging Today's Technologies to Build Your Business. It's basically, they changed the name of my, give them something to talk about, how to build your word of mouth. And so it's using technology and customer service to tell a better story.
Yeah.
So,
And you know, Sean is. Go ahead, Bill. Sorry.
I just want to say one thing. Sean, I've been saying this a lot, and I think we've talked about it. The word I can't stop saying to people when I talk to realtors is, well, other than saying, you know, solving, building relationships, solving problem, having fun, is conversations. Mm-hmm. Your entire life depends, your entire work life depends on you having conversations with people.
Yeah.
How are you going to do it? What are you going to do to have more conversations? Because once a conversation starts, and Todd, same for you. Once you're talking to a buyer or somebody who's got the power to pull the trigger, that's all you want, a conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes realtors, and Sean, I know you agree with this, they don't get that. They look beyond that, and they get so tied up in the technology or the other things.
Right.
It's pretty simple. It's not easy work. It's hard work to get them, but you just want conversations. Right?
Yeah. You know, next week, my brother Kevin is having me come in to talk to his leadership team at his engineering company. And I said, what do you want to talk about? And he said, engagement. Mm-hmm. And engagement is conversations.
Yes. But
engagement can be social. Engagement can be handwritten notes. Engagement can be face-to-face. Engagement can be, you know, long-term. But engagement, conversation, it's, you know, I tell people the best salespeople are the best question askers.
And
awesome. When you ask questions, it makes other people talk. And the more other people talk, the more you can listen. And the more they talk, the more you understand. And the more you hear the way they're answering questions and their behavior styles and their what we have in common. You know, it's such a fallacy that I think salespeople think that we have to have something in common with our customers. Well, we don't have to have things in common with our customers, and they don't have to have things in common with us. We have to find out what we have in common. And we do that through engagement, through conversations, right? And I know, you know, we're all on the same page there, and it's engagement and conversations is what creates, you know, that's
the opportunities.
Why social media, whether it's Snapchat, the way you were doing, Bill, today, and you know, your images that you sent of your golf at West Chase, it created me engaging with you in chats and responses.
And not just you, there were other people.
Oh, of course.
It was awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. And I know Todd does that as well.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I always like to think my best selling tool, Sean, is not selling, right?
Sure.
I mean, you walk into someone like you guys, if you walked up to someone and say, hey, I'm a realtor, I'd love to represent you and sell your house. They're going to be like, all right, blah, blah.
That's such a sales pitch, right?
Yeah.
If you just have, as Bill said, conversation, engagement, get to know them, make them comfortable, then when they have the problem or the opportunity, they go, oh yeah, this guy can help me.
Yeah.
Top of mind awareness, right? Top of mind awareness.
I got to give you one last one we'll share for the listeners that hung out this long with us. But have you heard Tom Ferry's response, Sean, to the question, hey, how's the market? Which is the number one thing a realtor's asked.
Sure. Right?
Number one thing. And I love this response. I'm sure you have it in some different format. But generally, most realtors are go, hey, it's pretty good. Or yes, you know, hey, we're doing good. But I'm pretty sure it's Tom Ferry who said,
it depends. Are you renting? Are you buying?
Are you buying or selling? It depends. Are you buying or selling? Isn't that a great answer? I know I'm late to that game, but I've been promoting the hell out of that too, because what does that do? Wow, it starts a conversation.
Sure.
And it's a question just like you asked. You know, you want to be the most interesting person at the party? Ask everybody about their kids and don't talk about yours.
Right.
The afterwards, everyone's going to go, yeah, Sean was amazing. What's he do? I have no idea, but he's the most interesting guy I talked to. Because you kept them talking. You know, you kept asking them questions.
You know, Todd mentioned it, Bill. I think something I learned from a mentor of mine, if you can listen somebody into a sale, that's the greatest sale I ever make.
That's awesome. Right?
When you just keep asking them enough questions, so they basically say, like, I think I want to buy this. You know, Bill, I think that's a great decision. I think you and Cindy will be more than happy here for many, many years.
Yeah.
And awesome. When will Kevin be coming down to visit? Right. So
in our world, we call show up and throw up the worst salesman. They bring a sample and they walk to someone's desk and they put it right on the desk and say, hey, this is our Yale 6000 Serie X devices. It's got stainless steel end cap and head, stainless steel body. But I mean, when I walk in, it's Sean, I hate that I got to give you credit, but you're building relationships, right? I mean, that's the number one thing you have to do is to build relationships. And I think the number two is you got to solve their problems. And gosh, this is like a commercial.
So if you're looking for a speaker at your next event for real estate, John Carpenter, that's at Sean Carp on Twitter.
And if you've hung on this long, mention that minute 77 of episode 89, and you get $500 off my speaking fee.
Hey, they're getting ready to start the World Series game five. We got to go.
Right, guys. Hey. Great conversation on behalf of Todd in Cumming, Georgia, and Bill down in St. Pete. I'm Sean Carpenter in Columbus, Ohio. Thanks for listening to The Stare Down.